Fun Zone, the Forensic Fun Zone. That's what we're doing, the Fun Zone, the Forensic Fun Files. Episode 20. We're here. We made it to episode 20. Sorry about that goofy-ass voice I was talking in, but I did it, and it's done, and we're going to continue. It's episode 20. Can you believe that? I kind of can't. It's kind of crazy. That's 20 episodes. We've gone through a lot down here in the friendly clouds, the comfortable clouds of Blue Sky Studios. We've been through so much. My gosh, can we reflect? I need music to reflect. Like some looking back music where it's real cheery and happy. You know, first episode, I think I've gone through this. First episode was improvised, totally improvised, totally unplanned, totally random. I had no clue what I was doing. My intent was to watch an episode of Forensic Files and like capture the, I was going to prove you guys all that I've watched them all. That was the original premise of this show. And I hit record down here, episode one, and just kind of winged it. Wung it? Is it winged or wung? I would imagine it's winged it. Yeah. And then, you know, fast forward, you had coked up Chuck in a truck. You had wet ass pussy. Spoken with the amazing impersonation of the Peter fucking Thomas. If you don't remember that, look back. If you haven't heard it, it was amazing. Peter Thomas nailed it. My impersonation of Peter Thomas wasn't that great, but I felt the dialogue was there. What about whenever we did the musical random fun facts, the musical fun facts? That was fun. Remember? I mean, we've gone through so much here. And now we're here, episode 20, wild and crazy. I had a feeling I'd make it to 20, but I wasn't sure. Hell, at the rate I was going at the beginning, I thought I'd hit episode 20 like in a month or a month or two, as much time as I was putting in down here. But obviously we had to make some adjustments. I made some adjustments, and you know, a couple months later, here we are. And I think we're going strong. I do. We're not firing off two episodes a week, but come on, man. I can't do that. I'd love to. If anybody wants to invest and fucking give me a basement and food and internet, I'll just kind of set up in your basement and I'll do it all the time. Fuck, I'll give you an episode a week, a day. How about that? And one episode a day. Book me. Sorry, that was dumb. I'd love to, though. I'm serious. I got an interesting episode for today. I had to dig for an episode. Truth is, I've got a couple episodes that I'm saving. I am waiting for the right time. I want to prep for them. I've got a handful of additional material that I want to attach to them, or I want to do them with a guest. Episode 20, and I still haven't had a fucking guest. Go figure. I mean, I was close. I thought I had one the other day, but she bailed. Big surprise. Not on her behalf, but episode 20, no guess, but I'm getting close. I can smell it. It's right around the corner. I have like 5 or 10 episodes that I'm saving. And, you know, there's so many good ones in there, as we all know. I mean, I haven't gone over the premise of the show in a while, I guess, but, you know, I'm pretty sure I've seen them all. I, I know I haven't, but I'm pretty confident I've seen 95% of the episodes. And that's confirmed. I mean, every time I watch one to try and find a new one, I'm like, eh, I remember this one. Wife kills him. Or, I don't remember this one. Husband kills her in a pool. Whatever. The sleepwalking episode, I'm saving that one. The episode one, the disappearance of Helen, I forgot her name, where he throws her in the wood chipper, I'm saving that one. Like, dude, I've got these saved up, but I don't, I want to do something big. Hell, I thought, at the beginning, I said I wanted to do like a all-star episode where we go through, pick the best mustache, pick the best character description, pick the best perp description. I haven't done that either. I'd love to do that. Now, that one will take a ton of time, but it'll totally be worth it. I don't know when that'll happen. Maybe episode 40. We'll see. But, I think I've seen them all. And Peter Thomas he's the main reason why. If you haven't seen the show, if you haven't, I mean, the narrator of the show is Peter Thomas, and he has the most soothing voice in the world. And he's also top-notch citizen. I believe he's a veteran as well. Just a stud all around. Also saved a school of babies when he was 17. Two of them. He's amazing. He kicks ass. He is the reason why I'd go to sleep to them every night for the last, 15 years. And fun fact, this year is the 25th anniversary of The Forensic Files. No shit. Hip hip hooray! I love doing that. But they do, they meaning FilmRise and, the company that produces the show, they're supposed to be like a 2-hour special being played sometime this year. I tried to do a little digging to find out, and I wasn't lucky enough to find the information on it, but there was a CrimeCon 2021. Want to go to that real bad. Side note, how fucking cool would CrimeCon be? No fucking clue what's going on there, but I bet it's cool. In Austin, and that was at the beginning of this month. Apparently, there was some news dropped about the 25th anniversary shenanigans, and I wasn't able to find anything. Now, I didn't look super hard, but 25th anniversary is here. But today we're going to, last episode we talked about the brain quite a bit, my brain, and we ain't going to go there. We ain't going there. Just know I'm good. I'm good, dog. You know what I'm saying? I am. But we were talking about the brain, and with the brain comes some of the coolest, in my opinion. I shouldn't say cool. I apologize. Some of the wilder, I guess, wild and crazier, weird crimes or whatever that involve these twisted brainwashing, essentially. I love brainwashing. I'm brainwashing you now. Sit back, relax, and I have no idea where that's going. I'm sorry. I think some of the coolest fucking diseases, or not diseases, these crimes that are caused by brainwashing are the most amazing. Kidnappings. In particular, like today, the episode we're going to watch, which is It's episode, it's called Head Games, and we'll get into the episode numbers and stuff here in a little bit, but it's called Head Games, and it's about, it involves a case of Stockholm Syndrome. Stockholm Syndrome's a good one. You know, that's a wild, we'll talk about that here in a minute. But, you know, you've got Stockholm Syndrome, you got these cults that kind of use Stockholm Syndrome to a degree, if you will. I don't know how the fuck they do some, they, these guys, like, you know, Manson and them did these things to, you know, however many people. I mean, I don't know. Manson's story is crazy. I don't know what the best. I honestly don't know very much about it, but I mean, crazy. One of my favorite. Now, I think there is an episode on Forensic Files. I'm going to have to find it. But one of my favorite ones is Munchausen by Proxy. And my goodness, Munchausen by Proxy is so disturbing, and just, it's a mental illness in a form of child abuse. And it's when a caretaker of a child, most often the mother, makes up fake symptoms and causes, which almost turn into real symptoms to make it look like a child is sick. Now, I'd say probably one of the most famous ones is that it's a special on Hulu. It's, what is her name? Gypsy. Man, I forgot her last name. Look it up. It's on Hulu. It's called Gypsy. The name of the show, Mommy, Dead, and Dearest. That's one of them. There's Gypsy Rose. Just look up Gypsy Rose. I mean, that's one of the most disturbing, well, to my knowledge, there's probably a bunch that I don't even know about, but Gypsy Rose's story is wild. And that one's based in here in Missouri, right here in Midwest, Central Missouri, I believe, down there in Springfield. I believe that's where it took place. It's a wild story, but that one's so weird and just, I love it. It amazes me. But, you know, like I said, this episode is about Stockholm Syndrome. And if you don't know what Stockholm Syndrome is, it's based on a bank robbery back in 73 in Stockholm, Sweden, where this bank robber, he held these four hostages hostage for 6 days. And when they were released, the hostages even, they attempted to protect the perpetrators. And they even had like a relationship with them. I believe they were seen hugging their captor as they were leaving, like, because their captor will just convince them with fear that, you know, that there's only one way to live, and it's to follow these specific rules, basically scaring them into believing whatever they want, for most of the time, an extended length of time. I don't know much about the actual incident in Stockholm. I'd love to eventually, someday, maybe. But so I'll talk about some other ones that I've heard of or watched a little bit on. Cults. Cults are fucking awesome. It's terrible. Terrible way to say it. But cults fascinate me. Jonestown. The Jonestown Massacre is one of my, that one just blows my mind. If you don't know what Jonestown is, it was back in 78. If you ever heard, you know, if you've heard the expression, drink the Kool-Aid, I believe that's where this came from. You had their leader of this cult was Jim Jones. And he started a cult. Well, I mean, I think he called it a religion. I think he called it a religion. It was called the People's Temple. But he convinced, I mean, it was like over 1,000 people to move to South America. And they started the settlement. No electric. I don't think they had water. and they started this community where he was basically the leader. He was insane. But long story short, things were going downhill, and he convinced more than 900 members to drink Kool-Aid that was laced with cyanide, I believe, and that was one of the largest mass suicides ever. I mean, can't imagine there being any more than that, but children, parents, I mean, just over 900 people. I didn't think it was that many, but this Google little article says more than 900 members, so that just blows my mind. Jonestown's crazy. I mentioned the Manson family. The Manson, I know a little bit about it, you know, the Helter Skelter stuff, and he convinced his followers to carry out several notorious murders. I believe that was in L.A. That one's made for TV. I've seen a documentary about it, but it was so long ago, I don't remember all the details, so I don't want to really spew out a bunch of BS that I'm not confident about, but, no, he preached it. He strongly implied that he was Christ, and he often told a story envisioning himself on the cross with nails in his feet and hands. I mean, I don't know too many details about it, but I mean, to convince multiple people to carry out several murders in the late 60s, weirdo, fucking wacko. Then you've got another, this one is, I would assume this has got to fall under Stockholm Syndrome. And there's a bunch of these cases, don't get me wrong, but these are a handful that when I was doing a little research stuck out as ones that I knew a little bit about. This Joseph Fritzl, you ever heard of him? He's a sicko and a half. I believe he was over in Austria, and he convinced his whole family that one of their daughters, Elizabeth, got kidnapped, and he locked her up like in this concrete cellar, like under his garage or something. I forgot where I saw the documentary, but I mean, I don't even know if it was a documentary. This was intense. It was underground, hidden doors, and he held her in there for over 24 years. And she had 7 children down in this concrete cellar, and just, he was sentenced to life in a psychiatric prison. Why he didn't get shot on the spot, I have no idea, but yeah, Joseph Fritzl, look him up. Psycho fuck. Sorry, that F-bomb was a little juicy. Then locally, you know, I meant to do this earlier whenever we were talking about the cults, because cults are, they crack me up. Have you ever seen Scare Tactics? The movie, the show Scare Tactics? Awesome show. People scare this. They use top-notch tactics to scare these people. One of my favorite episodes. Every time I talk to some people about the show, nobody remembers this one. But it's about a cult, like in this neighborhood. Anybody who knows me, I may have said it at some point, but I say, try the pie. So they convince these guys to come out and put together some furniture in this like gated community. And then like the president of the community comes out. I'm going to play a little clip for you because I think it's hilarious. It's short.
Can we run back there and take a look?
We have a quick tour?
Sure.
I'm just going to take a quick tour.
Go right ahead.
And remember, the individual must suffer for what?
The community.
Wow. I knew that quote.
Sacrifice to the individual is good for the community. It's like that. I'll tell you later. How do you like living here? How long have you lived here for?
I've lived here for 2 years. We like to say that once you've tried our pie, life becomes a piece of cake.
Really? Wow.
How are you there, fella?
One of his buddies.
Sweaty.
acting like he's.
To be honest with you.
The pie's gotten to him.
Wow.
The homeowner.
This is the back room.
Homeowner who's in on it gets taken. She just gets pie stuffed in her face.
That's all right.
So she comes out, she's got pie all over her face.
Right, so what happened? Good news, someone enjoyed some pie.
Someone liked the pie.
Delicious.
She's got her eyes all jacked up. It was delicious.
There's one extra special piece left.
You have to try the pie.
You have to try the pie.
No. Oh, please, try the pie.
Try the pie. No, try the pie.
You've had enough pie. Why don't you have one more?
We only have one more piece of pie.
Have more pie.
Have more pie.
I
said try the fucking pie.
Try the 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 pie.
He's freaking.
I really don't feel comfortable right now.
You have two options.
Yeah.
You can try the pie.
They give him the whole scare tactic, Dealey. It's awesome. Try the pie. Try the pie. I love it. Sorry, I got way off topic there, but I had that locked up and loaded, and I couldn't wait to show you guys or play for you guys. I was going to talk about the local. There was a local apparent, Stockholm Syndrome case here in Missouri. Another one. The fuck is it with Missouri and kidnap fucking kids? This one was Sean Hornback, which I've got a little ties to. I'll get to that in a second, but the reason why I'm bringing it up because it's because of these weird ties I had to it, which was I was working for a sign shop, and there was a Sean Hornback Foundation that was printing out missing children folders and putting them on the back of places at grocery stores and stuff. So that's why this one always stood out to me. But he was missing around early 2000s, and he had been kidnapped for over 4 years. Michael Devlin snatched up Hornback, and then eventually picked up another kid, Ben Ownby, I believe. And with Hornback, like they said, I guess Hornback was 11 years old, 2002, when he was kidnapped while riding his bike. He was missing for 4 years, discovered in January 2007, along with another teenage boy. This one's weird because people question if it was Stockholm Syndrome, because some people, I mean, who knows, just because of some random, Devlin must have been pretty loose with him, because, he was actually, what's his name? Hornback was actually stopped by the police, it says, at least three occasions while he was out walking after dark, so he's out by himself, police are stopping, Devlin wasn't with them. He was stopped by police. Hornback also had a girlfriend. He could use the internet, so people question it, but until you're put in that situation where you've got a guy who has scared the living fuck out of you, that has threatened your life with, you say a fucking word wrong and I'm going to kill you and your family. Who am I to question it? But it is a little questionable. I mean, if the police stop you, you got a perfect opportunity, but whatever. With the local ties, I had to bring it up. And I got one more I'm going to talk about, because this one, I didn't know about it. I mean, it hit national headlines when they were found, but this is the Amanda Berry, Gina DeJesus, and Michelle Knight. I probably said that last name wrong, but Amanda Berry, I guess, was probably the most famous of the three. I guess I have no idea why I would say that. I just assume that because that's the name that stuck out to me when I originally heard about it. It was around that same time, early 2000s, right before she turned 17. She was held prisoner by Ariel Castro, suffering abuse for more than 10 years. She escaped in 2013 and was able to help rescue the other two victims, Michelle Knight and Gina. Berry had a baby while kidnapped too. and Michelle Knight actually delivered that baby in a plastic pool. Three girls. You know, I would love to tell you more about this. I would. But, you know, I have a guest here with me. He's had some firsthand experience with Amanda Berry and was the main reason, probably the main reason I heard about this case. And I'm not making light of it, but this guy is a fucking hero, a fucking saint. And this may be one of the best interviews of all time. Welcome, Charles Ramsey, everybody.
Charles. Hey, Charles, let me talk to you. I'm talking with Charles Ramsey. He's a neighbor. Walk me through again what happened this afternoon. You heard screaming.
Heard screaming. I meet my McDonald's. I come outside. I see this girl going nuts trying to get out of her house. So I go on the porch. Okay. I go on the porch, and she says, help me get out. I've been in here a long time. So, you know, I figured it's a domestic violence dispute. So I open the door, and we can't get in that way because how the door is, it's so much that a body can't fit through, only your hand. So we kick the bottom, and she comes out with the little girl, and she says, call 911. My name is Amanda Berry.
Now, did you know who that was when she said that?
When she told me, it didn't register. Until I got to call the 911, and I'm like, I'm calling the 911 for Amanda Berry. I thought this girl was dead. You know what I mean? And she got on the phone and she said, yes, this is me. And the detective Cook, right here, Detective Gregory Cook says, Charles, do you know who you rescued? I said.
Now, and when did you see? When did you see Gina?
About five.
Good. He's helping another camera guy out. Charles the man.
The police got here. See, that girl Amanda told the police, I ain't just the only ones. It's some more girls up in that house. So they went up there, you know, 30, 40 deep, and when they came out, was just astonishing because I thought they were going to come up with nothing.
Why is that?
I mean, whoever she was, and like I say, my neighbor, you got some big testicles to pull this off, bro, because we see this dude every day. I mean, every day.
How long have you lived here?
I've been here a year. Okay. You see where I'm coming from? Right. I barbecue with this dude. We eat ribs and whatnot and listen to salsa music. You see where I'm coming from?
Yeah. And you had no indication that there was anything going on?
Bro, not a clue that girl was in that house or anybody else was in there against their will. Because how he is, he just comes out to his backyard, plays with the dogs, tinker with his cars and motorcycles, goes back in the house. So he's somebody that you look and you look away because he's not doing nothing but the average stuff. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. There's nothing exciting about him.
He boring. Well,
until the day.
What was your reaction on the girls' faces? I can't imagine to see the sunlight, to be around people.
I knew something was wrong when a little pretty white girl ran into a black man's arms. Something is wrong here. Dead giveaway.
Dead giveaway.
Charles, thank you very much.
Dead giveaway.
Thank you very much for your time. And
either she homeless or she got problems. That's the only reason why she run to a black man.
Oh, my gosh.
Charles, thank you for being there, man. Charles Ramsey, neighbor, he heard the screaming.
He gives the camera a big fat thumbs up. Charles Glenn, or Charles Ramsey was a hero. He is a hero. I hope he's doing well these days. I can't imagine what he was going through when you're put in that situation, especially. I lived here a year. I lived here a year. I ain't rid with that man. I mean, somebody your next door neighbor has three girls and a baby hidden inside. Like, it's wild, wild stuff. And I hope Charles is doing good. But this is, you know, the result of Stockholm Syndrome, and a captor putting the fear of God into another human in their brain and just forcing them to just, you know, to just bow down and listen to every word they say and do whatever they do or else they're dead. And in this episode of Forensic Files, this takes place. Once again, we're going to start our episode here right now. Because it's a good one, and it involves Stockholm Syndrome. I can't wait to look up that episode of Munchausen, because I forgot which one they cover on here on Forensic Files, but they definitely I love Munchausen. Anyway, this episode, Head Games, Netflix Collection 4, episode 19, original season in the gang of Forensic Files. It is season 9er, episode 10. So I'm going to load it up here and let's get it on. Head Games, here we go. Hit and play. The Stockholm Syndrome. So this is, you got, it involves a young couple. It goes camping in the woods. The survivor, Cammy, I forgot her name. When she originally comes out of the woods, she has one story, but a few days later, she changes her story. Why? Poison. Let's get in on this intro jam. Never did that before. So yeah, they're in Mount Hood in Oregon. Bit of a sportsman paradise. A lot of people go up in there fishing, hunting, boating. And this is back in the 80s, I believe. You got Kendra and Julio Torres. They decided to go into the woods for a camping trip. Julio was 21. Kendra was just 16. Pretty much love at first sight, Kendra says. I wonder if we can listen to this.
Because he could see that the relationship was heating up.
You know, the trip was, they were celebrating their 1 year anniversary. Kendra brought her dog along, her childhood dog. So they're fishing, you know, they're hanging out fishing, and then there's this other guy. Was fishing nearby, and you know, Kendra said she was young and attractive, and when old boy saw her, Tom Brown saw her, that his eyes lit up when he saw her. And Tom tells him about the spot nearby where, you know, they just stocked it. Fish are biting. So, like, Kendra, they're like, hell yeah, we'll go. Hit it up. So they had to hike several miles away. So by the time they got to the new campsite, it was dark, so they had to set up camp. 3 days later, Kendra gets out. She's at the police department, and she calls her mom, and she says, you know, her husband's dead. Julio's dead. He was in a terrible accident. Kendra said they had gone fishing and later did some hunting, and they sighted a deer. Julio handed Tom a rifle so Tom could take the first shot, but then the rifle went off accidentally, killing Julio instantly. Kendra screamed, freaked out. Dog instinctively attacked Tom, and Tom shot her dog. Tom is our random awesome fisherman that has the fishing hole spot. Tom had a record. Tom had a record. They stayed in the woods after that, and because Tom didn't want, he was afraid. That's what his story was. He knew if he went back into town, police weren't going to believe what had happened. Kendra, confused, she decided to stay with him. But then after 2 days in the woods, they both decided that we should probably go to authorities. Tom, of course, says it was an accident. Kendra backs it up. They both cooperated, took them to where the body was, helped them recover the rifle. Then to prove his story, Tom, he took a lie detector test, passed it. And the Kendra said that she's speaking. She says the sheriffs believe Tom. They definitely favored Tom, and they didn't want an innocent man locked behind bars. But then, a few days later, Kendra changes her story. But why? But why? You know, we'll get into it here shortly, but, you know, the original story is an accident. 3 days in the woods. I mean, you can plenty of time to really fuck with somebody. Kendra's mother even questioned it because she knew how she loved the dog. She knew how she loved Julio. Mother just thought it didn't sound right. You know, why wouldn't it come straight out of the woods? When Kendra went back home, when she went inside her house, she just fell apart. You know, she told her mom and dad, just don't hate me. You know, then she said it was an accident. It was not an accident. She wasn't sure if it was an accident or not. She didn't see him shoot Julio, but here's what happens. In this version, she said she was making breakfast. She hears a gunshot. Tom Brown comes running from the woods, and Kendra runs to see what had happened to Julio, and then she heard another shot. And she looked next to her, and it was her dog, you know, jerking and shaking on the ground. And she looks at Tom, really shocked. She's like, "You shot my dog." He smiled at her, big old smile, and he says, "I shot your husband too." I mean, imagine how traumatizing that would be. She's 16 years old. Remember that? Just witnessed her dog get shot. Pretty sure. And a guy just with a smile said, "I just shot your husband too." So imagine the trauma. And they're in the middle of the woods, middle of fucking nowhere. And, you know, this has got the perfect makings for some Stockholm soup. I shouldn't say that. It's not funny. You know, then they hiked a little bit longer, and then he raped her. Repeatedly raped her over the next several days. Was reading her Bible aloud, and she thinks that was the only thing that saved her. She was reading aloud, so Tom's hearing this. Tom eventually says, eventually he starts crying at some point. He said, "I didn't kill your husband on purpose. It was an accident. Oh, and the reason that I brought you up here is because I'm afraid to go back to prison." So there was a little truth to the original story that he told the police, except for that big bombshell. So over the next couple days, Brown is just pounding it in her head. "It was an accident. I'm so sorry." And he agreed to let her go if she told the authorities his side of the story. So, you know, she's pounding it in her head, you'll live if you just tell my side of the story, you'll be fine. The investigators hook her up to a lie detector. She fails. Lie detectors are so bogus. I can't stand that. They're so bogus. But of course she fails, and who knows, maybe it's because in her head the Stockholm syndrome had caved in there. And just so then investigators start looking at evidence, physical evidence, the forensics. They wanted to know if the dog was shot from the front or from the back. So you've got two different, that kind of would kind of confirm the person's story. But the dog was buried. They weren't able to retrieve his body. But they found out the bullet that killed Julio shot him through the front jaw, right side of the jaw, across through the spine, so kind of across through his back, through the back of his neck, opposite side of. So they're looking at trajectory, but it wasn't really enough to tell if it was an accident or intentional. You know, that just kind of describes angle. Then they start analyzing that stupid fucking polygraph, which the fact that he passed it, They believe her, but her polygraph fails. Don't believe him, but it passes. So later they decide to interview Kendra for several hours, just trying to figure out what kind of trauma she'd gone through and figure out why she would vouch for Tom Brown and then change her story. You know, our analyst here, he starts talking about some history about the Korean War, where they were isolated and often brutalized, often for fear of their life. And after a long period of time, some of them would accept the point of view of the captor, just like Stockholm Syndrome. I'm wondering why they call it brainwashing at the time. So this is pre-Stockholm Syndrome, but we already knew this. Like, this is old news, guys. I apologize. Like, I just told you guys all about this, and they're just spilling the beans now. But it happens to hostages when four things happen: a traumatic shock, isolation, indoctrination, and the promise of a reward. So you've got the shooting of the dog, very visual, very powerful, shows him how dangerous he is, it's a real threat, and then being assaulted physically. Obviously, powerful stuff. You know, as traumatizing as it gets, when you got the isolation of the middle of nowhere, the woods that they're in, and then the indoctrination where Tom Brown is, you know, repeating it, it was an accident. Old Brown was saying it was, she, Kendra was partially to blame for it. I have no fucking clue how. Why, how? So I guess he's convinced her of that. So just more powder, some more sugar on top. And she believed it. We finally got a guy here who totally says this is, you know, I mean, everybody knows that polygraphs are questionable, but this guy's like, there's a reason why they're not admissible in court. This is the perfect reason. It's 0 for 2 in this case. So the prosecutors now accepted the idea that she was brainwashed. But now they got to figure out how Julia was murdered. Kendra couldn't really testify to what happened to Julia, but she can testify what happened to the dog, what she saw with the dog. And then they start analyzing the trajectory again, the ballistics evidence. So then they start analyzing that trajectory, meaning, you know, that considering the angle was down, so there's a good possibility that Tom was standing over Julio. Then they start analyzing gunpowder spread, meaning how far away the gun was from our victim when it was fired, because, you know, they start testing the rifle at different lengths away from a target to figure out kind of that gunpowder spread on a piece of paper, just to figure out exactly how far away he was. So eventually, when you do that, I mean, they start at 6 inches, go to a foot, go to 18 inches, whatever, you know, they keep going and going until there's no gunpowder at all. Well, no, that's eventually what they're trying to find out, and then they find out that the rifle had to be 36 inches away from the target to leave no gunpowder. That meant Brown's rifle was at least 3 feet away when the trigger was pulled. Now, the story was that he was handing him the rifle, and then if you consider that with the muzzle, the bullet entry, and how it was face going from the jaw down and back across to the back, at a downward angle, kind of it looks questionable, and it was good enough to charge him with murder. How about that, old Tom Brown? Based on the ballistic evidence, prosecutors convinced Tom Brown murdered Julio Torres out there in the woods to have his way with old Kendra, 16-year-old Kendra. It's kind of a hard case to try in court because of Kendra's story changing, the only physical evidence is trajectory ballistic evidence, but while Brown was in jail, admitted to a cellmate. Dumb ass. How about that? Smart guy. So in jail, while he was waiting for the trial, he tells a buddy, and then when I beat it, I'm going to go after her and those two prosecutors. That's what he said to his cellmate, which we all know is a questionable defense as well. The cellmate, whenever the cellmate's turn, but I don't know how they can even use that in court, because every cellmate's going to be trying to, they'll say anything and everything to get out. But I guess if there's details involved with it, then corroborates the story, then see ya. Oh, so Brown was actually so confident he didn't even want a jury. He left it up to the judge to make the decision. Of course, he got life in prison. We got Bob Hamilton, who's the attorney who still visits Tom Brown's parole visits and makes sure he sits in there, rots. As our episode's wrapping up here, I mean, you learn the brain once again. It's fascinating. It really is fucking fascinating. What you can instill, how much fear you can put into somebody to make them, I mean, say they're trying to stay alive. And what's the other one? The by proxy, Munchausen. If you haven't heard of that, or if you haven't seen, don't know anything about it, look that up. If you're listening to this, obviously you've got a little history with crime and this type of stuff, so you probably know Munchausen and Jonestown. Look up Jonestown. Jonestown is so creepy. There's a lot more. I didn't do a ton of research for this, but that our episode just wrapped up. You know, there's so many good cases out there. I say good. And there's so many interesting cases that involve brainwashing. And it's a lot easier than you think whenever there's a gun pointed at somebody's head, or you know, the fear that amount of fear is put on another human. A lot of things can change. It's fucking scary. So that wraps up. That wraps up our Head Games episode. We will definitely try to get another episode to you soon. I say we. Who the fuck else is down here? Me and fucking Charles. Is it? He was awesome, by the way. What I should have did after I started playing the video with old Charles, who found Amanda Berry, I should have kind of coordinated like me talking to him. That would have been pretty badass. But I didn't. But how about I actually get a real fucking guest in here? I'm close. Like I said, I told you, I'm really close to getting somebody down here. It doesn't smell in here. It's actually really comfortable in here. I can light candles and make it smell like vanilla or pumpkin or wild berry. Whatever flavor you like. I'll get whatever candle you like. Just kidding. I've got some people lined up, and I will have some people down here soon. But that's it. Episode 20 wrapped up. Head Games. Munchausen by proxy. Stockholm Syndrome up in your grill, dog. I hope you guys liked it. Seriously, rate it. Maybe leave a little comment on there on your streaming service if you can. Rate it. Tell a buddy. Tell a bro. Tell a sister. Tell a whatever. Spread the word. Hope you guys like it, and I'll try to get an episode out back to you guys as soon as I can. You guys take it easy and stay cool. Later.